Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Leo Laporte, episode 169, recorded August 12th, 2010, Riding the Bear. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And by Drobo, the original S, Pro, and new Drobo Elite, offering expandable storage products for individuals, small businesses, and creative teams. For more information and instant rebates, visit Drobo.com/Windows. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers your favorite subject, whatever that might be. And here with your favorite subject right now.
Please call in and tell us.
Please let us know. Paul Thurrott, he is near Baden in Germany, down the road a bit from Strasbourg, which is where the pâté comes from. Hello, Paul. Are you eating well?
I'm eating too well.
Yeah. Good food.
You know what's sad? The month before I came here, I was trying to finish up that Windows phone book as, quickly as possible. And I, killed myself to get that done. I didn't go to the gym. I didn't leave the house. And now I come here and it's like the land of sausages and rich sauces. This is the worst possible combination. Yeah. From a health standpoint.
Yeah, Kartoffel and Schlag and Wiener Schnitzel.
Get home and, basketball is going to start up in September. And I'm going to be
in a world
instant
of hurt.
Cardiac arrest, is how it's going to go.
Well, this is, I think, going to be a somewhat short show, partly because your friends are waiting to stuff you with sausage.
Well, actually.
And beer.
We had sausage for dinner.
Oh, all right. Now they're going to take you out and have some beer.
Some wine will be had.
A little vino. But, and also, as you say, this may be the slowest news week ever.
The reason I mention this, Leo.
Yes. Yes. Why do you bring that up?
Why do I bring that up? I've been writing news stories since the mid 90s. I don't remember exactly when, 1994, 95, somewhere in that time frame. And I've always sort of viewed my job as, I think of it as a digest. But I also think of it as I'm not going to cover every single thing that happens because not every single thing that happens matters.
No.
No. And I'm also one person. I'm not CNET, so I can't just, blindly cover every little pseudo story that comes down the pike. But it amuses me and amazes me how often I get email about those things that I just choose to skip because they're not stories. They're not interesting. And, and I just listed a few here in the show notes because, this week alone, because I get email, people say, you obviously didn't know about this because you didn't write about it, as if I somehow don't have my finger on the pulse of what's going on.
No, my friend, I chose to ignore it because it's irrelevant.
Yeah. And, maybe I have the wrong approach. Maybe explicitly mentioning that this is dumb is a better way to do this.
That's what you do every week or every day. You should publish a list of stories I'm not going to cover because they're stupid.
Yeah, like in this issue and then the stories and then not in this issue. And yeah.
One of my favorite podcasts does that, the Daily Bugle. They do that. They say things we cut from this podcast for reasons of time include, and then they just give a list. It's actually
how strange.
It's the best part of the show.
Yeah. That's interesting. Well, so this week, the things that didn't happen include, Microsoft actually published a web page somewhere within the Windows web pages they have on Microsoft.com comparing Windows 7 to the Mac. The number of stories that this generated astonishes me.
The headline said, Microsoft urges people to switch back.
Yeah. Or Microsoft is attacking the wrong market. Yeah. It's a new marketing campaign. Posting a single web page to a site that has to have something like 71,000 pages.
Right.
As if this were, and pointing to it in any way, shape, or form, which they don't really do. It's just whatever. People go to the Windows website, to find out about Windows. So having information about why Microsoft believes Windows might be better than the Mac for those people is not an attack, and it's certainly not, it's not interesting. I mean, why wouldn't they have something like that? It's like deriding a car company for advertising that their car is better than another car from another company, right? I mean, it's dumb. It's just, it's
or
not
mocking Apple because they publish videos showing bars falling on other people's phones. Oh, wait a minute.
Well, okay.
We did mock that. So this woman has surprisingly large eyes.
Yes.
You know what? Wait a minute.
I think the key for her is she looks like a Mac person.
Oh, is that it? She has a hammock in her house.
Yeah. Who would have a hammock in her house?
What is that? I know.
Someone creative. Someone maybe who would use a Mac.
Deciding between a PC and Mac, here's what you need to know. So yeah. Really, the what I saw summarized.
I mean, you see this giant attack. You know? Like, I mean, really? I mean, you know, compared to things like the laptop hunter ads, which were, you know, legitimate advertising.
Those were aimed at Apple. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and interesting. I mean, so this, not interesting.
They mentioned that you can get Blu-ray and there's more software.
There you go.
There you go.
Those are number one and two on the list. Yeah. So who cares? Give me a break. So the other one was Microsoft recommends Chrome. Right. In other words, one of the things that happened over the past. It would be a shock if it happened. Microsoft released the new version of Hotmail, right, to all of their 350 million plus users.
Right.
It seemed like they suddenly sped it up there at the end because, you know, they were coming under a lot of criticism because they had originally said this was going to take all summer and people were complaining and complaining and complaining. So finally they said, screw it. Okay, you can all have it. They release it. And now, of course, people are having some problems.
Doesn't work.
And this was the point of the slow rollout. It was like, you know, we're trying to make sure it works okay. So Microsoft says, look, we're going to fix the problems. In the meantime, as a workaround, here are a couple of things you could do. They never mentioned Chrome. The Chrome thing came up in a forum on support.microsoft.com where people were interacting with a support engineer from Microsoft. And one of these guys said, you know what? If you can't get it to work in IE, just try Chrome for now and it will work fine. So now he, as a representative of Microsoft, thus Microsoft has now recommended Chrome. Really?
So Windows Live Edward S., we got our eye on you. Maybe he's that mole from Apple that they were talking about the other week. He'd definitely be from Google, wouldn't he?
But my absolute favorite non-story.
By the way, these are the stories we're not covering, just so you know.
Yeah, as 20 minutes in. Microsoft is going to develop Windows Phone games in-house. Oh, my God. Why would anyone ever develop a game for Windows Phone? I mean, Microsoft's going to develop games. Why would anyone else do it? Really? You know, Microsoft develops games
like the
for
Xbox?
Windows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Xbox 360, exactly.
Yeah.
Microsoft, you know, they owned the publishing company at the time. They owned Bungie, but they were responsible for Halo and many other games.
Right.
That hasn't stopped the Xbox 360 from being a success or not a success, however you want to look at it. Why would it be surprising that they are positioning Windows Phone as a new game platform, right? It's right up there with games Windows Live and Xbox Live on Xbox 360. You can use the same programming model, program games that run on all three platforms. Yes, it's a game platform. Why wouldn't they create games for this platform? That's crazy. This is not a story. So that's what I got for this
maybe,
week. Those are not stories.
Maybe what you're saying, what you're really seeing is what you said at the beginning, which is it's a slow news week, so they're making this crap up. They're grasping at any straw and they can find.
Yeah, but you know, the thing that bugs me is these stories always come out of the sites that publish everything.
Right.
In other words, these sites don't have to make stuff up. Why? It's like they're on a churn model. You know, we have to have 30 stories today, you know, and they get propagated. I mean, these stories were on every single tech website in the world today or this week or whatever. You know, these are not stories. They're not interesting. They're not true. They're not anything. They're nothing. They're not news stories.
Well, if I may continue in the curmudgeon mode that you've started here.
Please do. Please do.
Really, the problem is, and it's been a problem for a long time, is that blogs like these and TechCrunch and every other tech news blog, it's all about link bait.
Yeah.
It's all about generating page views. That's where they make their revenue.
Yep.
So even if there isn't a real news story, it's not like a newspaper. It's even if there isn't a real news story, they will gin one up. And the whole key for them is, and this is, I try to avoid this.
Right.
We even get in this conversation here at Twit. SEO. What's going to generate traffic? What words can you use in the title that will generate links, will generate traffic, and ultimately generate revenue? And frankly, that's what the online news business has turned into, and I think it's terrible.
It kills me because I get accused of this every once in a while. Like, oh, you just publish this, to. And unless it's like an outright joke, an obvious thing on my blog, I would only do this on, I recoil from that kind of thing because I really don't do this. I mean, each of those stories I mentioned is exactly what you say. Microsoft recommends Chrome. I mean, what a headline.
And it works.
You know, Microsoft is attacking the Mac.
It works.
Microsoft is going to shut out third-party game development on Windows Phone,
It works because it gets dug, it gets slash-dotted, it gets Twittered.
Yeah, I know.
It generates
blindly.
Traffic.
Blindly. And that's the problem. The problem I have isn't that someone wrote it. It's that it propagates across the net like it means something. And I hate that. I hate that some mindless moron at Slashdot or wherever sees this and says, yes, we have to publish this. I think people should have an ounce of common sense and not do that. And I just don't do this stuff. I it drives me crazy that other people do this.
So I kind of fell for that a little while ago.
Why not? Yeah. What are you going to do?
That one, I fell for that one where, with the Windows blue screen of death caused the deep water mining disaster.
Okay.
I mean, obviously it didn't.
I never even heard that one, if you can believe that.
Oh, it's a funny, it was buried in the New York Times story. Where
how come no one emailed me about that? Guys, come on.
the one of the engineers, it was in the same story where he said, yeah, we turned off the alarms, they were keeping us up at night. He also said that some of the computers would generate something we called, like he coined this, the blue screen of death. And so we just stopped using those because they were crashing all the time.
Turns out it was the desktop.
Well, who knows what it was. Yeah, exactly.
It had like a blue background.
And it's obvious that the fault lies not in the fact that they were, I mean, maybe they shouldn't have been using whatever they were using in mission critical environment, whatever. They didn't fix
Someone turned off an alarm.
Right. That's they didn't fix it. That's the problem.
As always, it's a human being.
Right. I put the headline in with two question marks. Like,
yes.
Oh, really? And the link. And I got an email from somebody in Microsoft, like somebody in Microsoft PR saying, we'd like to we'd like to talk to you about your tweet. Like they're monitoring what people are tweeting. I meant to ask you about this. In fact, if I can find it, I will, because I want to know if you know who this guy is.
Okay.
Bill Cox?
No, I've not heard that name, but actually, let me...
Bill Cox at Microsoft.com, Senior Director of Windows Communications. He says, Leo, what is your... not dear Leo.
Dear Dick.
Leo, what is your basis for this tweet on Windows Deepwater? By way of introduction, I run PR for Windows. I'm concerned that you're creating a lot of traffic over something with no facts behind it. Please contact me or let me know the best way to reach you. Thanks, Bill. Okay. Could it be? Is that real or is that somebody tweaking me?
It could absolutely be real.
It was a tweet. And it had double question marks like, really? I guess I left out the word really?
Microsoft misses the days when they just kind of controlled the whole story. They're like Pravda,
And it wasn't like I wrote an article. It was a tweet.
Right. But, but maybe they were trying to kind of stop this one at the source, right?
Well, it wasn't the source because I had a link to the article that said...
Well, I mean, in other words, there are different layers of where this thing goes. Right. That sometimes that's how it starts. If enough people tweet about something, maybe they're using one of those programs that says, here's the big, trends right now.
Clearly that was what it is.
You're not, Joe Blow, you're Leo Laporte.
If he read my Twitter post, it had the link to the article whose headline was... Microsoft Windows causes blue water, deep water disaster. So that's what awesome. Is my source? That. I was pointing to an article, and I put two question marks anyway. I thought it was funny.
So the next time Microsoft releases Windows 7 sales figures, they should compare it to the number of gallons that have fallen into the Gulf. Yes.
Yes. We've sold more copies of Windows than gallons.
One copy of Windows for every dollop of oil that has killed a bird somewhere in Louisiana. I don't know. That's unbelievable.
It's pretty funny.
And actually, the craziest part of the story is I never even heard this.
Well, good. I'm glad because I was a little embarrassed. I thought, I guess it implied that I somehow thought that the Windows caused the deep water.
Or in fact, started the story, which is
And I didn't start the story. I was going through the news and there was a lot of articles around this. Again, this is that link bait that everybody loves so very much.
None of us... are innocent, I guess is how I would put it. But like I said, when I go for the link bait thing, it's clearly a joke.
Oh,
in a blog, not on my news site, you know, not a formal article on my website. It's a joke, obviously.
You don't do it systemically. That's the difference.
I mean, systemically, I don't think I even do it at all, really. Right. But I mean, I think we're all human. I mean, I must, you know.
Well, we're all aware of driving.
Choose a provocative headline or not choose a provocative headline. I mean,
well, I always choose the provocative.
I don't have my finger on the pulse of advertising, or I don't have no idea what's going on. I remain in a clueless state that should absolve me of all blame of anything. But I mean,
just to be fair, yesterday we did This Week in Google, the name of the show, Carrier Humping Net Neutrality Surrender Monkeys. I think that was a good link traffic generator.
Awesome. Awesome.
And wait till you see the title for this show.
I know. It's going to have to be good because that's a good one to live up to.
The only time I ever consider click is in the title. And it really was more of a creative act. It's like writing a headline.
Not the podcast of record here. I mean, we're having a good time. It's okay to be funny. You know, you can have a funny headline. I mean, you know.
That's the whole point. I'm having fun here.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. We do have some actual news. That was the news we're not going to cover today.
Yes. Here we are, 24 minutes in, and I think.
I want to know what you think about Mark Hurd. I want to know about the Dell streak. I want to know. I mean, the Google Verizon thing, which we spent a lot of time on Twig yesterday. Yep. I'd love to hear your take on that. All of that coming up. Paul Theroux is here from Germany with a massive glass of wine. That is the biggest.
Does this turn this into like a PG-13 podcast?
Nah. Are you kidding?
It's just so we're clear. It's after 9 o'clock at night here.
Half these shows are our hosts are.
I want to. You know what I want to do? I want to live in Europe, and we do this show at this time, and I'm always in a bizarre state of drunkenness. I think I will be like the Christopher Hitchens of the, you know, tech blogger world.
Yeah, I don't want to impugn Christopher Hitchens, but it does seem like he's often in his cups. Maybe that's just his style of...
I think it's somewhat affected, but I think it's also based on reality.
Paul Theroux, you're an ignorant slut.
He probably doesn't drink or smoke anymore, but I mean, this is his thing.
It's like Dean Martin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. You can be the Don Rickles to my Dean Martin.
All right. All right, you knucklehead. Here we go with a Ford commercial. I want to real quickly mention our friends at Ford because they did such a great job. We were talking about that trip to Detroit at before the show began. Oh, gosh, I had fun there. Somebody sent me a T-shirt that I wore inadvertently, and I shouldn't. It was funny. It said, "I'm so bad, I vacationed in Detroit." and you know, that impression.
I literally was in Germany's Detroit yesterday.
You were in Stuttgart.
Stuttgart, yeah.
Where the test track.
You know, they're doing a little better than the American car companies, by the way.
You know, Ford. You haven't checked the Ford stats
lately.
No,
Ford's doing great. Actually,
Ford is really crushing it. I'm really...
I want to point out to people, because, you know, obviously Ford's advertising here.
If you didn't like Ford, you could say it.
People will remember, well, long before Ford ever advertised, I rented a car in Colorado, and it had the sink thing, and I couldn't stop talking about it. It was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen. So I completely get it. If I was in a market for a new car now, I would absolutely consider a Ford, if only for the sink system.
They're actually, if you test
one. So I know that sounds like a calculated sign.
Yeah. No, I remember when you were talking about sink.
I know what it sounds like.
And I knew that we were pitching Ford at the time. We hadn't got the buy yet, and I knew it. And I was going, I'm not sure.
I didn't, but I didn't, right?
You didn't know. And I said nothing.
Okay,
but now driving a car with sync, I love my Mustang. In fact, we have a Toyota. Jennifer drives a Toyota Highlander, and I had her. I talked to her about the Flex. She wants to trade in a year old Highlander to buy a Ford Flex because it's such a nice car. They finally, I think, Ford is leading the way in bringing you know kind of the pride back to the Motor City. And I have to tell you, Detroit, Dearborn, we had a blast. We saw the production line. I drove on the test track, which is Stuttgart has that famous Mercedes test track. This was like that. The guy took me on in a 2011 Shelby Cobra Mustang at 100 miles an hour. We broke the equipment. It was so much fun. Anyway, if you get a chance, watch those specials. They're on the Twit specials feed. We also got to go to the Maker Faire at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn. It was just really neat. And Ford has asked me to tell you that
tell
when
me.
No, to tell the world.
Tell me specifically.
Not you. Well, you probably should know this as well. that when I crashed the Ford Flex into the Fiesta, two things. It was my fault, one. And two, there was not a scratch on either car. So just...
Wow.
I said we could cut that out if you want. I said, no, we love it. Leave it in. But would you mind just putting a little disclaimer that says, you know, disclaimer. Something like closed course, unprofessional driver, something like that at the bottom. No, I was, you know, the Flex has auto park. Like it does, you pull up and you press a button and it parks the car. What they didn't tell me, of course I should have known, is once the car's parked, you might want to turn it off or put on the parking brake. You don't just sit there because the car is still going and will continue to back up and hit the car behind it, which it did. Much to my surprise.
As designed.
I thought, it's exactly as designed. I thought, this is good. It'll turn itself off. It'll put up a little sign that says you can get out now. I don't know. Maybe it'll open the door. I don't know. No, it doesn't do that. Leo is an idiot. It did have the Ford Sync in it, and I'm a big fan.
And they're still advertising. That's,
I know.
That's neat.
That shows their faith in the American
or
way of life.
Or it was prepaid or something. I don't know.
Yeah. We got your money, Ford. No.
Sorry about the car.
No, I was getting out. I mean, we hit it pretty hard. And I was getting out thinking, oh, this is not good. I'm seeing my whole career flash before my eyes.
That's neat.
I had the checkbook. Literally, I had the checkbook.
I'll have to go watch this.
It's
That's
pretty
good.
Funny. It goes, boom.
And you I'll take the Fiesta. Sorry about that.
You know what? The Fiesta, not a scratch. We hit it hard with a Flex, which is a big car, not a scratch. Yeah. In fact, there's two test track drivers or engineers sitting in the Fiesta. It turns out they had a bet that I would hit them.
And so they were prepped for this.
They're laughing at me. They're guffawing in the Fiesta. Anyway, the Fiesta, the Flex, and my Mustang have one thing in common. The incredible voice-activated sync keeps your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road. It is a safety feature. And I have to say, I haven't crashed into a single car since I had it in my Mustang.
Not counting that.
Not counting the Flex. The Flex.
The thing
that was something. Yeah. True. That was something else. True hands-free calling, so you never miss a call. Turn-by-turn voice directions. You don't even have to buy an additional GPS. It's in there. It even reroutes. It knows where your standard routes are. It knows where the traffic conditions are. It'll reroute you. 911 assist, voice-activated music, and podcast browsing. You could say, play Windows Weekly 169, and boom, there it goes. Works with all your devices. What Ford did that was smart is instead of building in things like the calling and stuff into the car, they have very sophisticated Bluetooth. So you're bringing the latest technology in with your phone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android. I use the Droid X with it. It reads my text messages from the Droid X. So when I get a text message, it goes beep, and it reads me the text message. And I can even send some canned messages back all through voice activation. It's just amazing. Find out more about Sync at SyncMyRidePodcast.com or visit your Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury models and say, I will test drive one if it has the Sync in it. And, you know, if you use the auto park... it's really cool. See, I was just mesmerized because you take your hands off the wheel and it goes and it parks you. I'm terrible. It's perfect parallel parking. And so I'm just like a goofball going, and the car just kind of slowly drifts back, faster and faster. Boom.
That's great.
That woke me up. It was like Inception. That was the, what do they call that when you wake up from the dream in Inception?
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah.
Yeah. There's the kick. They call it the kick. I had a kick. All right. Wasn't much.
So did the people in the Fiesta.
Yeah. They're laughing. What an idiot. So after that's done,
awesome.
We're going to go for a ride, and they actually gave me a helmet after that.
We don't usually hand these out.
They made me wear a helmet. Windows Phone. You got more news on Windows 7 Phone due out October?
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is news, but, you know, one of the big topics that's come up, I've been blogging about this stuff and writing about it, and, you know, people write in with lots and lots of questions about the Windows Phone stuff, and one of the things that people are, it's funny to watch people almost wake up to this, you know, even though it's been kind of known for a while, is that Windows Phone will only sync with cloud-based services, i.e. Exchange, you know, Gmail and Google Calendar, the Hotmail stuff, you know, Windows Live and so forth.
That's the future.
It will not sync... It is the future. It should be the present.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I think we should already be there, most of us. But, you know, there is this hopefully dwindling, but still considerably sized contingent of people who have Outlook mostly, but sometimes other programs that literally are locked onto a single PC and all their data is there. And today they're synchronizing that data somehow, you know, through an application or a service or whatever, to a mobile device and maybe up to sometimes to cloud services. And what they want to know is, okay, but I can do this with Windows Phone, right? And, you know, the answer is no. And it's amazing to see the responses I get from these people. They're all over the map. But, I mean, a lot of them are just very fearful of this world because, you know, they've done things a certain way for such a long time. They're sort of confused by this. So I've written a long article about this. I mean, I think the way I would summarize it is for those people who have data locked into Outlook or whatever, you know, Outlook for you right now is the center of the universe. And to do anything with this data, you have to somehow sync it with Outlook. You know, so Microsoft has certain tools that they use for Windows Mobile, you know, Windows XP, Vista, and 7 and so forth, and that will synchronize information. But really what you want to do is move the central part of this, the hub, you know, the central, the master copy of the data up to the cloud, whatever that is, you know, whether it's Google services or Microsoft stuff, whatever. You can still use Outlook if you want. I mean, there's no reason you can't connect to this data from Outlook. You know, that's fine if you want to keep using Outlook. But the master copy shouldn't be there, you know. Outlook should become one of the, you know, the hubs or the spokes or whatever instead of the central part of it. And that's what I've written about, you know, basically is that.
I agree. I tell everybody, the radio show, they call me a lot saying, how do I sync now? How do I sync now? And I say, you really want to start moving that data to the cloud.
Yeah, it's got to be up in the cloud first, you know.
Yeah.
The very first inkling of this, the very first, I think, movement toward this was probably IMAP, you know. And IMAP, you know, obviously predated most of these mobile devices. But, you know, IMAP in the beginning was a nice way to, from a laptop PC, to open up your laptop anywhere in the world, connect online, and have that, you were viewing the actual single copy of your data up in the cloud. You didn't think about it as a cloud, but you weren't downloading stuff, you know. I mean, you would download a copy. You were sort of synchronizing it almost. But the notion was, you were seeing, it was always a reflection of that master copy up in the cloud. Whatever folder structure you had, whatever emails were read and unread, you know, you could mark an email as read on one client, close the laptop, open a second laptop, hit the same server, and it would be identical, always, you know. And this over-the-air push technology we have now through Exchange Active Sync and through other technologies does the same thing, but not just for email, also for contacts and calendar. You know, so Google has adopted this technology. Apple does something like this. I think Apple might. I think Apple actually licensed Exchange Active Sync as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Windows Live is going to be doing it very, very soon. You know, through the Hotmail stuff and through Windows Live Contacts and Calendar. It's all happening this year. So, and obviously Exchange does it. I mean, Exchange was the beginning of this on the Microsoft side. So, this is the way to go. And it, you know, but again, I think for certain people, this is a hard thing to swallow.
I just try to say, look, it's going to be painful at first because that first, you know, that when anytime you export data into another thing, you got to get a sync tool and all that.
Yeah,
but once
yeah.
you got it, you will be so glad. Is it your experience that it kind of helps eliminate things like duplication, which is a big problem
well,
with syncing and all that?
As an anal retentive person that I am, I mean, I used to travel and go on business trips, and I would have to have, you know, it changed over the years. It went from CDs to DVDs to hard drives, you know.
Laplink. I bet you were a big Laplink user.
I didn't actually use Laplink, but I used things like Laplink. Right. And you wanted to make sure there was always, or I wanted to make sure, I was crazy, really, but you wanted to make sure you always had a backup, you know, and a way to get stuff back and a way to even recover the whole PC if you had to. And in many ways, comparatively speaking, I'm kind of, you know, footloose and happy and, you know, fancy free.
Is it Windows Home Server that's kind of freed you mostly, or is it the cloud?
Yeah, so. Well, there are different aspects to it. So, looking outside of email and calendar and contacts, I would say that the other stuff that matters to me is the photos, the documents, and personal and professional. Yeah. I've got work documents dating back to 1995 on my home server. That's probably most of it. There's music and videos and stuff. That's not as important, but you know, you want that stuff backed up and all that too. But when I come to, I'm here in Europe, and one of the neat things that I am able to do is connect to my home server.
Mm-hmm.
As I would at home, I move stuff off of the laptop now that I'm working off of, to the home server because that's the central store for the data. That's what that happens to be now for me as a home server. I mean, in the future, you would kind of imagine this would be up in the cloud. But right now, there's no obvious kind of winner for this stuff. There's no single service that does everything. You know, I think we'll get there. But right now, we still need storage. You know, Windows Home Server for me is that central location. For things like photos, we've talked about this a little bit. I think, you know, I back up to certain things. I have S3 backup. I back up to Google, Picasa Web, and so forth. But for email, calendar, and contacts, personally, I go through the Google stuff. And I do that because it's excellent. It's updated frequently. It's the most efficient of the services. It's free, you know. You keep this master card. It connects to everything. If you have an iPhone, an iPad, an Android device, a BlackBerry, a Windows phone now, Windows Mobile, whatever, it connects to everything. It can accept data from almost everything that matters. You know, if you when you make that initial move, if you were coming from Outlook, you can output your contacts and your calendar data in CSV format. Very simple. One-time deal. You're in, and you're off and running. The beauty of the Google stuff for me, and this is true of Windows Live as well, for whatever that's worth. I mean, as this year continues and they finally turn on the Exchange ActiveSync support, I mean, they'll be roughly neck and neck, is that this information is available all the time from anywhere, you know? And you know from using different mobile devices, Google also has excellent web interfaces. Mm-hmm. Mobile web interfaces too, so that if you're using a public computer or someone else's smartphone, whatever it might be, you can always access your stuff. It's very easy, and they have great interfaces. So it's just, you know, you shouldn't have to worry about this stuff. Right. It makes it less of a worry, you know.
It's the modern way of doing things. Old habits die hard, and I think it's a lot of people who spend a lot of energy getting ActiveSync working.
And, I know, it's crazy.
They just don't want to let go now.
I, you know, if you want to keep using Outlook for whatever reason, I don't. I evaluate every version that comes down the pike. I spend months with it, and every single time I come over with the same thing. It's just too heavy. It's too slow. It's too bulky. I don't like it. But I just did this today because I wrote the article. I actually had this laptop that doesn't have Outlook on it, and I thought, you know what? I can install Outlook on this very easily because the code for Outlook has been installed on there because I installed Office. I don't even need a disk, and so I did. I hooked it up with Google. It took 10 seconds. And my Google stuff is in it. If Outlook is what you want to use, no problem. You want to use Windows Live Mail, no problem. If you just want to use the web interface, which is what I prefer to use, no problem. You know, you got to get it off the computer. Hard drives fail. Computers get lost and stolen. Your backup doesn't work. You know, whatever. I mean, you just get it off of there, you know. I think replication is important in different scenarios and all that stuff. But I think that just with this topic specifically, what we're talking about is just the center of this. It should be centered in the cloud. And then everything else is just a spoke off of that. I'm not particularly excited that the Streak doesn't have an even semi-modern version of Android. It's astonishing to me that they would ship this with a 1.6 today. That's bizarre. You know, and I think it's neat that they're going to update it down the road. But, I mean, how could you not ship this without 2.0 or you know, something brand new? So that's too bad. So, no, I didn't order it, and I'm not going to order it. But I'm going to wait and see, and I'm curious about it. I mean, I think a slightly bigger size would be good. Somewhere halfway between this and the iPad, perhaps, might be ideal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was one of the things we talked about was screen size, and I don't think it's clear what the best screen size is. You've got, you know, the largest.
No, and it may vary from person to person, right. You know, what your needs are. I think the iPad screen is too big, personally.
I love my 4.3-inch Droid X. I think that's a nice size.
Yeah. I'm thinking somewhere in the 7-inch range is going to be about right
the
for
Dell's
me.
What, 5?
For a, like one of those Arcos-type devices, you know, for a little, for movie playing.
Right.
You know? But see, when I buy something like that, what I'm buying is a movie player. I'm not buying something that is like a technological jack of all trades. I don't care about the other stuff. You know, for me, that's what I want out of that. You know, I think there's going to be, you know, I don't want to say a backlash, but I mean, I think there's going to be a growing number of people who kind of go away from the larger screen devices just because they're not as convenient, you know.
I know you. I know you have a date with your friends in Germany, and I want to see if we can run through a few more things before you have to go because you've got a lot of stuff to talk about here. You have do you have an opinion on the Mark Hurd thing? Mark Hurd, of course, is CEO of HP, who was forced to resign for jiggering the expense reports to cover money he spent on, apparently, an HP contractor.
As we call them.
A very lovely HP contractor who had sued for sexual harassment and settled.
Oh, man.
It was kind of a mess.
People tend to forget, or actually don't know, you know, HP's been around since 1939. This is a seriously old school company.
Oh, yeah. They used to make scientific instruments.
Yeah. They have an almost Amish-like, you know, kind of moral guide, you know, that they adhere to. And it goes back to the founders, you know.
This is not unusual.
No.
Oh, interesting.
No, I mean, I have some cursory experience with these like family-run companies where, you know, for moral reasons, they'll actually, you know, they don't put up with certain kinds of behavior, you know. And what happened with Mark Hurd was that, yeah, he had this relationship or whatever it was with this woman, and he was flying around the world and would have dinner with her at these HP events. And then he, you know, he turned off the checkbook at some point, so she sued him for sexual harassment.
Oh, so the now, deal the, was that. Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
I have to be very careful here because I don't want to cross the line.
Yep.
Into slander or libel. So let's just say this is all alleged. We, you know, these are the alleged facts.
Yeah, no one knows.
No one knows really what happened.
The HP board found out about this, and they did two things. You know, first they investigated it to see if they could prove these allegations, and by the way, they couldn't.
Oh, interesting.
But they also hired an outside consulting company to say, "Hey, look, if this gets out, is this going to make HP look bad? This is, you know, a big deal."
That's what they were worried about.
Yeah. So what this company found was that yes, this situation would irreparably damage HP's reputation. So they had to get rid of this guy, but they couldn't get rid of him for sexual harassment because they couldn't prove it. But one of the things that came out in that investigation was he was funneling expenses, money for expenses. To pay her.
Ah.
So
they could get him on that one.
Funds and that they could fire him. Now, the thing that kills me about this is, you know, depending on who you listen to, this guy is getting anywhere from $20 to $40 million.
Yeah.
As part of severance and stock options and so forth. The amount of money we're talking about that he might have funneled for her, in some estimates, is as high as only $20,000. I mean, it's nothing. But this is the type of thing I think that at almost any other company, and I don't mean almost any, but I mean in the tech industry in general, I would say, or in any big business, this is almost nothing in some ways. I mean,
he's the CEO, right? I mean, that carries more weight, right?
Sure. HP has undergone one of the most successful phases of their entire existence under this guy. And they are the biggest technology company on earth by far. And it's just amazing how quickly this kind of happened. I guess, you know, his deal was when he got caught, he said, you know, I'll just pay it back and we'll put an end to this. And they said, no, you have to leave, you know. They couldn't believe that he tried to fight it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they gave, you know, obviously, so he left.
I saw another story that said that his approval rating among HP employees was, I mean, like 34%, was really low. Could that have also, I mean, could it have been just his time anyway?
You know, he was a cost cutter too, right? I mean, one of the things he did when he came to HP was cut costs. And I think a lot of that is probably people who knew people who got laid off during this time period, perhaps, or, you know, things like.
And do you feel that he's been successful? It seems to me that he's done a great job running. He succeeded Carly Fiorina, who did some things at HP that people were very critical of, like the Compaq merger.
She was out till lunch. That woman was absolutely.
It seems as if Mark Hurd turned the company around in many ways.
In an editorial of sorts in the newsletter, I wrote, you know, I don't care what Mark Hurd did. He was still a better CEO than Carly Fiorina. I mean, give me a break.
Right.
So I think he did. What he did was wrong. Yes. I don't think you'd have to look too hard at any of the biggest companies in the world to find behavior in the upper ranks that was far worse than this. But okay, you know, whatever. I just think in a certain, you know, it takes a certain kind of company to say, yeah, we couldn't prove sexual harassment, but we're still going to get rid of you.
Right.
Interesting, you know.
We at Ziff Davis, there used to be a saying, I used to work at another family-run company. There used to be a saying called hide the boots. I was told it came from a sales high-level sales guy who on a trip bought some very expensive alligator skin boots and expensed them.
Yikes.
And his manager pulled him in and said, dude, I don't care if you buy the boots, but you got to hide the boots. You can't just say, I bought the boots.
Right.
Charge it off to the client or something, but hide the boots. And ever since, so it is, in my limited experience of corporate environment, it is kind of accepted that a certain amount of finagling goes on with the expense report and that you hide the boots.
Okay. I mean, I've never been in a position to do anything like that.
The woman who told me this, by the way, was telling me this as we bought Kobe beef, a very expensive Kobe beef.
I think the worst
beef.
Thing I ever put on an expense report was a slightly expensive breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe I'm just too honest or something, but I'm
with you. And now as the CEO of my own company, they better not be hiding the boots.
Hide the boots.
Don't hide the boots. Unless it's me.
Right.
Yeah. I don't have to hide the boots. I'm the CEO.
Right.
Anyway, so, you know, understandable from a corporate governance point of view, but perhaps not the best move from the point of view of...
It's a tough one. You know, it's a tough one. And I don't mean to be too blasé about what he did wrong and to, you know, we should just brush this under the carpet. I'm not even suggesting that HP did the wrong thing. What I'm saying is the speed at which this happened and the very definitive nature of their decision is very HP. I mean, this is an old school company. It's like I said, the biggest technology company in the world, but it's also really, it's just old fashioned, you know?
Yeah.
This is very much in keeping with the way, you know, that the company is. It's just the way they are.
By the way, I've just been informed by memo that I am not the CEO of Twit.
And you have, in fact, been ousted. Dear Napoleon.
Here's your $20 million. Now go.
Yeah.
I am merely the chief Twit.
I see.
Let's take a break and talk about Drobo. I'm going to come back. We got more to talk about. Again, Google Verizon. Dying to know what you think. But we are sponsored today by our friends at Drobo, makers of the fantastic Drobo hard drive enclosure, a digital storage device that's automated, intelligent. Drobo stands for data robotics. And it's just a great way to get multiple hard drives into a single enclosure. You can access fast right from your desktop over USB. That's with the original Drobo. The Drobo S added 5 disk bays instead of the 4 and FireWire. Drobo Pro, with small business and creative teams, 8 disks. The new 2 terabyte. I think there's a 3 terabyte disk out now, so that'll be 24 terabytes. Wow! Fully redundant. So any 2 drives die in the 8 or the 5, you swap them out and you keep going. Never lose a bit of data. And then the new Drobo Elite with 8 disk bays and dual gigabit LAN ports, so you can use iSCSI, which makes the Drobo Elite look and perform just like a local disk drive on as many as, I think it's 16? Yeah, 16 different computers. So it's a SAN. I want you to save money on a Drobo right now. All you have to do is go to drobo.com/windows, drobo.com/windows, and you will save up to $500 on a populated Drobo. It is really a great product. We use them like crazy here at the office. I use it at home. Every photographer I know uses a Drobo. I want you to take a look. drobo.com/windows. Save $75 to $500 on a Drobo. Thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. Okay, Paul, let's talk about this Google Verizon thing. Just to recap for people who haven't been following the story.
Yeah.
Google made it kind of a pact with Verizon.
I think there was actually sulfur involved.
It feels like that.
Some kind of a goat sacrifice.
Google said when they announced it that they got great concessions from Verizon, that they were hoping this would become a template, template for legislation from the U.S. Congress and a directive to the FCC as a result. The deal was net neutrality is protected and preserved for legal uses of the internet on the landline-based internet, but on wireless internet, carriers like Verizon would have kind of a free hand to do anything they want in order to kind of foster the development of wireless infrastructure.
Right. So you know what this is like?
What?
This is like, you know, Henry Ford just opened his first automotive plant and in cohorts with the company that's going to build the roads that his cars will ride on, they release their idea for regulation for horses and buggies.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, we can do anything we want.
You got to be kidding me. You know, the thing that's classic about this was in the days before this happened, there were rumors that Google and Verizon were getting together to create some kind of a anti-net neutrality cabal of some kind, and they both denied it, you know, very heartily.
Oh, of course.
And then
not.
2 days later, they announced this thing that is just so horrific.
You know, the question that we asked on This Week in Google, and I invite you to listen to it because we discussed it in great detail on This Week in Google this week. But the question that we asked and never was satisfactorily answered is, why Google? Why? Why do this?
I know. I think Google knows, and as many of us do, that, you know, the future of computing, such as it is these mobile devices, you know, mobile anywhere access to data and all that kind of stuff. I think they feel like they could put this kind of baloney restriction on yesterday's broadband, as it were, today's broadband, I guess. But it's not even really today's broadband, is it? It's like today. Well, it is today's broadband, but they've actually have exceptions for certain services of the future. You know, it's really just a giant loophole ridden thing that is exactly the opposite of net neutrality, wrapped up as if it were in fact adhering to the ideals of net neutrality. It is snake oil salesmanship at its best. I mean, it's crazy how bald faced this thing is. You know, as for why Google would do this, I mean, the one weird thing about Google's business is that they're highly reliant on other companies to deliver customers to them, right? This is going away a little bit, but there are PC makers and operating system vendors like Apple and Microsoft that, you know, sort of provide them with the customers in some ways and the software that gets them to them. You know, there are the broadband suppliers that supply the connection. Google would benefit from kind of easing some of the controls there, that by having more control over some of that stuff that they have no control over now. And one of the things that Google has is a lot of money, you know, so they can afford to pay Verizon or someone else a lot of money to make sure that their customers get quick access to their services. You know, of course, this is the nightmare net neutrality, anti-net neutrality scenario, that, you know, someone with deep pockets will prevent the innovators of the future from competing because they can't afford to pay to have their customers have fast access to their new services, right? It really does create a two-tiered system of the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah. Google, there was a blog post from Google. Google has really tried to defend this, and it just failing miserably.
Well, it's like the Apple Antennagate stuff. I mean, it's like you're better off just letting it hang out.
Say,
there,
yeah, we did a deal with the devil. You got a problem with that? Google says, given political realities, and boy, as soon as they say that, it's like, okay, you're giving in, aren't you?
You could make a pro customer argument here that would be at least passingly.
They didn't even try that.
Except, yeah.
They say there are no enforceable protections at the FCC or anywhere against the worst forms of carrier discrimination against internet traffic. So we decided to partner with a major broadband provider on the best policy solution we could devise together. Gosh darn it, Google. I want to use stronger words. Bullpucky.
Yeah.
This is horrible.
It's crazy.
They claim this gives FCC powers. It doesn't. Even their own defense of this is just, on the face of it, bogus. So I'm very saddened by it, because I really had high hopes for Google, but apparently those were misguided.
Well, I think we're all partially idealistic or whatever, but
I wanted to be.
Sure. I think we had this conversation one time in the past. You know, when you have to say something like, don't be evil, that's like when you turn to someone at a party and you say, God, we're having a good time, aren't we? You know, you don't have to say stuff like that. If it's really true, right?
Yeah, you're right.
If someone does that, they're like making lemonade, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not really having a good time.
Very disappointing for me.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
There was one, I think it was Joe Wilcox. I didn't read the story, but I think I saw the headline or blurb about it. You know, he was talking about how this was his moment where he was giving up on all the Google stuff, you know, because of this.
Well, you can't. I mean, I guess you could.
You could, but I've thought about this. I mean, I've had these moments.
Where
too,
are you going to go? I mean, are you going to not use a cell phone? Because who's better?
Right. Well, I mean, I'll be using Windows Phone. I mean, the Bing service is certainly great. I get, you know, Windows Live stuff.
Might be the best argument for Microsoft ever. They're the Apple's clearly completely gone over to the dark side.
It's like, I don't really want to use the Microsoft stuff, but they're reasonably less evil than Google now.
This has become a case of Microsoft. Yeah. We're less evil.
Yeah. Well, they are. I mean, I know they clearly
it's
are.
True. It's true. Yeah. I mean, I have to go with you. You know, maybe it is time to go to Bing and go to...
Look, the Gmail and the calendar stuff has always been great. I've always loved that stuff. I mean, we can you know, yay or nay some of their other stuff, whatever. There's always been a kind of a weird, cold, calculating, math is the center of the universe aspect of Google that I've never really, you know, wrapped my head around.
I believed, misguided or not, in Larry and Sergey, and I believed that they had the best interests of users in the internet at heart. And sure. One of the reasons I believed it is because it was seemed pretty clear that Google's business model supported that belief, you know, that they could make money that way. Apparently, they decided there's more money in the phone business and they screw the rest of you. Well, let's get back with
they've
Verizon.
Only really made money on this one thing so far.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you got to feed the demon, you know. Microsoft, I used to have a phrase, you know, back in the day when they were reliant on IBM. IBM is the center of the PC universe at the time.
Yeah.
They were the big company. Microsoft used to call that riding the bear.
Yep.
You know, you had to do it. If you wanted to partake in the PC industry, if you wanted to be part of that, you had to deal with IBM, you know.
Yep.
And obviously that world has changed pretty dramatically. For a while, Microsoft was that company. You know, Google... I'm not saying it's not their fault, but I mean, you reach a certain size, you're printing money, basically. You can do whatever you want. You know, they have so much money, they can just enter markets at will. I mean, come on, this is not the breeding ground for a morally correct endeavor. I mean, it's just, you know, power. It's, you know, what is the phrase? You know, power will always betray you or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
absolute power. Yeah. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm so sad. My illusions.
Well, because I wrestled with the Google issue before, we probably talked about it at the time, you know, I have my doubts about this company, whatever it is. See, I've already made my peace with Google. Like, I accept them for what they are now. So to me, this is like, you know, like, what? Well, of course they did this.
Any sensible person would say, well, look, they're a publicly held company with a fiduciary responsibility to the stakeholders. Of course they're going to act in their best financial interest, period.
Sure. But that's what I mean. You know, it's like, why not just say, look, you know, we have X number of customers. We want to make sure they have a good experience. This is one way to do that. That's what we care about.
Yeah, admit it. You know, admit it.
That's an argument.
Yeah, just admit it. Yeah. Say, look at the stock prices, dude.
Yeah. Bite me. We could buy the FCC.
Bite me.
Maybe we will. You know?
Netflix spent a lot of money. Did you see this? $1 billion to buy Epix. I'm excited. September 1st, this goes online. They're clearly moving towards streaming.
Between this and Hulu Plus, which I need to experience a little bit to make sure.
I just got my invite today. I'm very excited.
I did too. So I can't use it here. You know, both Netflix and Hulu will not stream to Germany. So I can't play with this stuff. My wife and I have been watching a lot of the Netflix on, you know, the streaming on demand stuff.
I live on Netflix on demand. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have come to the conclusion that I don't need TV anymore.
Nope.
Regular TV.
Not with that and Hulu.
This thing has improved so dramatically that I just need this. So one of the conversations we had right before we went away was maybe... My kids still watch a lot of regular TV. They record shows on the DVR and all that. It's annoying, actually, when you do use the regular TV interface because all the shows on there are their shows.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know,
stupid
maybe,
kids.
Yeah, stupid kids. Maybe that stuff, maybe the cable box goes down in the cellar and they can go down there and, you know, watch that stuff down there. And maybe what we use on the TV in the living room is Netflix and Hulu. And that's it. You know, and by the way, you're talking about, think about the difference here. My cable bill has got to be somewhere in the $50 to $70 range a month or something, whatever it is. Just the cable part of it.
Right.
Hulu plus Netflix is less than $20 a month.
Right. That's a good
point. You could get away with just Netflix. It would be $8.99 a month.
Right. The only thing I'm a little disappointed with the $10 Hulu is you still get commercials, but they're not as long.
Right. And this is one of those things. That's why I need to spend some time with Hulu plus before I'm decided that this is okay.
I've got it on my iPad now, and you know, I'm paying the $10 a month. By the way, they charge you immediately. It's like you don't get a 30-day trial.
Yes, I saw that. But you know what? I signed up for it. I even though I can't use it right away, I've been waiting for this. I want to try it. You know, we'll do it for a couple months. We'll see how it goes. But
the Netflix deal is interesting because it, you know, it's my strong suspicion. In fact, I was talking to somebody who said, oh, you know, my Netflix movie is getting slower and slower. And a lot of the stuff on the top of the list, I can't get because they don't have enough copies of it. And she called Netflix and they said, yeah, you know, the
movie, the DVD stuff.
Yeah, the DVD, the movie company.
Who cares about that?
Well, but Netflix does because that's their business, right? But the movie companies are really slowing down Netflix. They're saying things like, first of all, you can't put it on Netflix until a month. You can't rent it until a month after it's been out. You can't, you know, so we're only going to give you 20 copies or whatever. And so this is really how they are gating what Netflix can do with DVDs. This is why Netflix says, okay, we're going streaming. And they spent $1 billion on Epix to add all these new movies. Now, between
Paramount, MGM, Lionsgate.
And they've got Stars. So I think it's just a matter of maybe a year before everything's on streaming and you get most of it on DVD.
This thing has come in such leaps and bounds. I mean, I recall when we first started doing this a year or 2 years ago, whatever it was, you know, there was a lot of B-movie stuff, crazy direct-to-video stuff you'd never heard of. But there were some gems in there, you know. And I remember a friend of mine, in fact, the same guy is out here now, you know, got that Roku box, and I remember him telling me initially, he's like, the selection's a little disappointing. And I said, you know what? Just go in there and look, because there's actually some decent stuff in there.
Yeah.
But you look at it now, they don't have to add a single thing. I'm done. I will not live long enough to see all this stuff.
I agree.
And I'm ecstatic about this.
So
this is a great service.
So Hulu, I'm a little disappointed. I'm looking at it on the iPad using Wi-Fi, and the quality, image quality is kind of low. It's not as good as Netflix.
Netflix is pretty, you know, the movie quality is, you know, obviously some of the stuff's in HD, some isn't. Some of the Star stuff is not in HD. A lot of the Star stuff, I think, is not in HD.
Right.
It's a little, there's still some 4:3 stuff on there. But,
I was very disappointed. They had Something About Mary on Stars, and it was 4:3. It's like,
If it's 4:3. The Star stuff, I think, by and large, is a little old school, and I'm sure that was part of the deal. You know, they got it cheap or whatever.
You know, the movie companies are like Google and Verizon and everybody else.
Oh, they don't get it. Price back in the 1940s. Are you kidding me? They've been doing this for decades.
So you know, really, is it a battle between what consumers, what we, the customers want, and what these companies want? And they don't match. The companies want to give you less.
So we're gonna kick and scream our way to the future. But you know what we want is some sort of Zune Pass type subscription where maybe it's $20 a month and we get on demand access to whatever, you know. And I don't mind paying a little bit extra if it's a, you know, maybe it's close to the release of the thing and you pay a little bit extra because it's brand new. Fine. That's fine. But, you know, this back catalog stuff, all the TV shows you get, the Incredible series, you know, we've been watching Heroes, for example, lately on...
This looks pretty good. I'm looking at Short Circuit and actually this is in high def.
You can watch every single season of The X-Files.
See, that's fun. That's going to keep you going.
I mean, how many years could that last you? That's a great TV show.
Most of Lost is on there, too, right?
I mean, how much time do you spend watching TV? I mean, you know, how much do you need? I mean, to me, this is just fantastic, you know?
Well, this is Hulu Plus.
I think when we get home, the TV downstairs becomes the TV for the kids.
It's really interesting for Apple because it really makes the iPad between the two. They've got Netflix and Hulu Plus. The iPad is now your personal TV.
Yeah, although in my case, you know, it's actually pretty instructive to look at what's in my, maybe it's not instructive, but when you look at what's in my living room right now, aside from the cable boxes, we have an Xbox 360, one of the new ones, and that connects to Netflix, and it connects to the Zune stuff, and I do have some, you know, some Zune TV show and movie stuff. Microsoft has done something really nice with the Zune thing, which I think a lot of people haven't noticed, which is, because who the heck would ever buy a movie from Zune, but if you do... That thing is always available to you at any time from any Zune-compatible device. And you can stream in 1080p HP, no problem. And that to me is amazing. So between that and Netflix, I mean, there's some interesting stuff going on the Xbox 360. And then, of course, in November, they're going to pick up the Zune Pass stuff as well. And then it becomes a music hub as well. That's an interesting set-top box right there. We have an Apple TV, which I love. The iTunes rental stuff is neat. And plus, I have streaming access to my iTunes content from another PC in the house. So that's neat. And we have, actually, that's it. Actually, right now, let me think. Yeah, actually, right now, that is it because I can play DVDs.
What's your total bill on all of that?
Well, that there's no bill to that. I mean, well, Netflix we pay for, obviously, is $10. Well, we do the 2D DVD version of Netflix right now still, although.
Yeah, right now, you might as well just do the one, which is $7.95, I think.
In fact, it's overdue just getting rid of that.
Yeah.
But our cable bill is the crazy thing, and the reason it's crazy expensive is we have multiple mobile phones on the same bill. We have two landlines through Verizon. We have internet access. We have very high-speed internet through Fios, which is fantastic. And, of course, we have the cable as well. And the funny thing about Verizon is because when you do this kind of triple threat thing, although we have actually four things in there, every time you try to call to cancel anything, which we've done multiple times, they don't want you to cancel anything. But what they've done to us, we've done this three times this year now, is my wife has called. I always have my wife do it because I feel like a woman will have a better deal getting through to a human being than I would.
Oh, is that your reason? Is that really your reason?
Oh, it is the reason. It works. No, yeah, you're probably she's right. Good at this.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
She has gotten our bill lowered three times this year, wow. And we've added services in the form of extra channels and whatnot.
Did she cry?
No, but she, you know, she would if she had to. And the thing that's classic is, and in fact, this happened right before we went away. She said, you know, we got like 3 months free of HBO. We can turn it on anytime. Do you want to do it now or do you want to do it when we get back? And I said, you know what? Let's not do it because we don't need it. There's no reason to add it.
Yeah.
If all this stuff, let's just forget it.
You know? Yeah. I'm really intrigued by all this.
That's a strategy you can use probably at any cable provider, but it's worked great at Fios. I mean,
I
just don't want to lose.
I am bullish. I know it feels like the bad guys are winning, especially this week with Google Verizon and, you know, they're just the whole
content stuff is tough. You got to remember, this is when you talk about book publishing, movies, right. TV shows.
Right.
These are all kind of old school now, right. You know, content providers.
This is the dying.
These guys are going to go down kicking and screaming, just like the music industry did.
Right.
And make no mistake, they went down.
So, I hope so.
Yeah.
They're going to fight hard. I mean, you got a tiger cornered here. They're going to fight hard. But here's the thing that gives me hope. Hackers.
Yes.
Hackers.
Sure.
Ultimately, if it comes down to a fight over control over the internet, the real competition for all these companies, the real threat to all these companies is people like Pirate Bay, is people, you know, people like WikiLeaks.
You know what kills me through all this stuff? Seriously. I still spend money on content all the time. I don't pirate stuff. We you know, one of the things we do every year when we go to Europe is we, you know, our friends come out and we always watch some British TV show because they run in like seasons of six or eight shows. So one year we watched, you know, Black Books. One year we watched IT Crowd, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
So this year my friend came out and he said, you know, yeah, I found this show called The Mighty Boosh or whatever. Let's go get this thing. I bought this thing. I bought the season on iTunes. You plugged into the TV with the HDMI cable. We watched it. This show is ridiculous. I'm not recommending it. But we regularly buy this stuff. I mean, it's not like I'm pirating content, you know? I'm happy to pay for it, but it has to be reasonable. And they're so customer adverse at these content providers. They don't want you to do anything.
Well, that's the thing. My point, I think, is that they're going to force you into piracy. Yeah. I think you're exactly right that we pay more for content now than ever before. We're not adverse to that.
It's obscene.
Give us the chance to give you our money because we're glad to do it. And if you don't, there's always
we're going
to
walk away.
There's always Pirate
Bay. I'm ready to walk away. I mean, if I didn't have kids, cable would be gone.
Yeah. So
for that, I've been paying this stupid bill for, you know, 20 years now, probably.
They're going to see the consequence. I think we win in the long run. I hope. I really do.
I hope so.
It feels like this week has been a bad week, and that's why I'm just a little discouraged.
I guess so. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, the Google thing. It's like, thank you for verifying everything I ever thought about the universe.
Yeah.
You know? It's too bad, but yeah, I'm not surprised.
All right, let's quickly move on. We've got the Windows 7 tip. I know your Wiener Schnitzel awaits. We've got, of course, you've got a glass of wine now. You're happy. You don't care, do you?
So, yeah, my friends are getting agitated.
Okay, okay. Quick feature of the week, tip of the week, right. Audible pick, and then software.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So I'll go through the feature and the tip pretty quickly. I mean, I'll write up an article, and these aren't very long.
Just go to winsupersite.com, folks. You don't need this podcast, really.
No, I don't even know why you listen to
it. No, it's really just an audio companion.
It's right. In fact, if you were paying attention, you'd realize I'm simply reading from the site as we talk.
The feature
of the week this week is the Start menu, which in Windows 7 is really just an evolution of what started in Windows Vista. And there are only really two, well, there's only really one major new feature, and that's jump lists, right, which are also available in the taskbar. And then there are some enhancements like the enhancements to Start menu search, which does a lot more of the plain English type searching, which is really great. And one of my favorite features in all of Windows 7. More important in some ways has been that subtle de-emphasis of the the start menu in lieu of the new taskbar, which can now be used to launch programs and store shortcuts and so forth. So one of the things I sort of expect to see over time is that the start menu gets further de-emphasized in future versions of Windows, because it's really just not necessary in many ways from day to day. The funny thing is, here we are, you know, it's about a year after Windows 7 came out. And of course, I've been using Windows 7 for almost 2 years now. I still find myself, this is an old, something I used to do in Windows XP and Windows Vista. I don't do it in Windows 7, but I still do the key combo, which is this. I'll hit the start menu, the start button to bring up the start menu. And I used to pin the things I used to use the most up at the top,
right.
Web browser and so forth. Right. So you would hit the start button, arrow key down, enter, and you'd launch the program. I tell you, I do this all the time. I need a new Chrome window. Start. Oh, shit, it's not there. And then, you know, and I do this. It's so ingrained in my head. I still do it, and it kills me. But, you know, they're de-emphasizing the start.
Keystrokes are hard to
unlearn. I'll get used to it.
Very hard.
I know, it's tough.
Yep.
It's like a muscle memory or something.
Well, it's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So the Windows 7 tip of the week is, I have to think we talked about this. I looked this one up and I couldn't find it, but you can prevent Windows Update from automatically rebooting your computer.
What?
And this actually just happened to me last night. Windows Update will, if it installs something that is a critical security patch,
yeah,
will wait and it will try to give you prompts. But of course, if you're not in front of the computer, eventually it will just do it. It will actually reboot your computer. And for example, this week was the regularly scheduled monthly Microsoft security patch fiasco. And a record number of patches were released and so forth. So you got to think, you know, every Windows computer on earth is going to be rebooting sometime
right.
this week.
Right.
I had all these things open. I had my website open. I had Word documents open. I had, just other things that aren't important from a document sense, like email and so forth. But I had a bunch of stuff open. And of course, I got up this morning and my computer was in a new state, like it had because it had rebooted. You know, mm-hmm. And one of the things you can do is make a change to the registry to prevent that from happening. And from a lesser step, I guess, is you could actually go into Windows Update and say, don't install until I okay the update. I actually think that's semi-dangerous. I prefer to let Windows Update do the installation. But in cases like this, I would rather be prompt that I need to reboot, right? Rather than wake up and discover it had happened.
I agree.
Because you might lose data that.
Well, we had that problem here with where we're working and machines say, I'm going to reboot in 10 seconds. What? No! Stop!
Yeah.
No,
so
I'm working here.
One of the little side tips to this is when Windows Update runs and needs to do something like this, there'll be a little Windows Update tray icon. Now, Windows 7, of course, this thing might be hidden by default because that's what Windows 7 does. So one of the things I do for those things I actually want to see like that, I'll drag it out so it is in the tray, and that way, every time Windows Update does do this, I'll actually see it down there. And because it's, you know, a light blue color, it kind of stands out. I'll know that something's going on, you know.
Right.
So this is sort of a subtle way to prompt yourself that I need to go look at this and maybe close things properly so I can reboot the computer myself.
Okay. Good tip. And is the registry key in, it's going to be on the Win Super site?
I'm going to put it in the article. I'll post this.
It's too long to tell, you know. Obviously,
yeah. You don't want me to. I can describe it if you want, but it's a a registry.
Yeah.
You have to actually add a registry key and the right value and so forth. It's not something that would make a lot of sense verbally,
right? You know?
But I'll do it if you make me.
No, don't stop. Forget I even mentioned it.
All right.
Moving along to our Audible pick of the week, and then we will get you our software pick of the week, and then you will get some Wiener Schnitzel. But first, okay. I want to tell you about Audible, that great place to go for audiobooks. I'm listening to The Wind-Up Girl right now. Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont recommended it on their Sword and Laser podcast, loving it. Audible is a collection of 75,000 and growing all the time books, performances, radio shows. And I'll tell you, if you don't have an Audible subscription yet, get there and subscribe, audible.com/windows. Your first month is free, your first book is free, and you can cancel at any time. So ultimately, you don't have to pay anything if it's not for you. But I think you should try it. If you listen to podcasts, I think you'll love audiobooks. Yep. Everything from bestsellers to romance to sci-fi, science and technology, self-help, kids' books, and more. In fact, Paul, you got a good recommendation. I've been wanting to read this book.
You know, I've been jonesing for a good technology company, you know, book, right? I mean, back in the day, there were a lot of Apple books, you know, Microsoft books, you know, behind the scenes, this is what it was like when they were developing Windows 95 or whatever. That stuff has kind of dried up. Yeah. You know, there isn't a lot of it. For a little while, there were some Google books, and I think we recommended a few of those. But, you know, as we kind of move on to the next big thing, I mean, people aren't writing. I think there are still stories to be told
about
Microsoft, especially about Apple. I mean, my God, why there aren't 12 books out about Apple, business study, you know, case studies about Apple and their comeback and all that. I have no idea why. But to me, that stuff is fascinating. Mm-hmm. So what we have today is, you know, Facebook, right? Facebook is the new phenomenon, 500 million customers and so forth. So the book is called The Facebook Effect, The Inside Story of the Company That Is Connecting the World. And I'm a few weeks behind on this. This has been out for a few weeks. But this, the reason this book is interesting, aside from the fact that it's about Facebook, is that he got unparalleled access to the company. I mean, all the major players at Facebook talked to him on the record, told him insider stuff, and it's just a fascinating look. And, you know, the type of book that I've always really enjoyed, but there just aren't a lot of these days. So it's a kind of a neat behind-the-scenes look at a, obviously, a very fast-moving and interesting company. Speaking of companies that aren't as morally correct as we'd like them to be, you know?
One of the knocks on this book was that it was really, pro-Facebook because he had such access. What do you think? I mean, you're listening to it now.
That's always the fear. I mean, I haven't gotten to any part of it that has been like that. I did read reviews that mentioned some of that stuff, and you do kind of cringe at some of the stuff they gloss over, or that he glosses over. But I haven't seen it so far in the parts I've gotten to. But
and it's the only one we've got. I mean, there's Accidental Billionaires, and that has a lot of made up stuff. And so I'm dying to read this. David Kirkpatrick, you can get it for free. We can almost any of their books. Most books are one credit, and you're going to get a free credit when you sign up at audible.com/Windows. This is U.S. only, although it seems to work sometimes in other countries, so give it a try. Audible is available around the world, and really a great service for your iPhone, your iPod, your Zune, your Kindle, almost any device now.
Oh, I should see if I can download from here, because I've already got a pick for next week. I've been doing a lot of...
You may not be able to get it because the Audible Journal.
No, you can
because it's where your credit card is from. Yeah, it's where your credit card is from. I don't think they care.
That's one of the fascinating things about traveling, by the way. It's like, you know, what works when you're away. Yeah. Like iTunes works fine.
Well, we tend to be very U.S.-centric, and I'm really trying not to.
How could you not be? I mean, you don't know. You know,
that's all I know.
You can't instantly know what it's like somewhere else, you know.
Right. But we have a large international audience, so I'm really very cognizant of this.
I hear from people who say, you know, it's the stuff you recommend is neat, but I don't get it in Australia, you know, whatever it might be, and you know, you forget. And it's one of those things you want to try to keep at it.
You bet.
And
I guess what I would say is... anybody who's listening understands it's a U.S.-produced podcast. We do the best we can. We cannot say, oh, you can get this in France, Germany, and England, but you can't get it in Australia. Yeah. We just can't do that.
It's not that we hate France, per se. It's just that...
oh, I love France.
Yeah.
No, it's just... We do the best we can. Consider that it's coming from the U.S. I think most people understand that.
Yeah.
And we do... What we mentioned is almost all U.S.-specific, especially with the advertisers, but your mileage may vary.
Yes.
Let's see. You got a software pick.
Unfortunately.
Okay. No, that's fine. We got time.
So the first one is, it's not an actual, it's funny. You do download and install it, but then you just access it from the web. But it's an add-on of sorts to Bing, right? Bing Maps, called Bing Maps 3D.
Ooh.
And, you know, it's really interesting. In testing Windows Phone, I've developed a huge appreciation for Bing Maps as opposed to Google Maps. And what it comes down to is just the look of the map is so much nicer. Bing Maps, I'm not as familiar with Google Earth, but if you consider the difference between Google Earth and Google Maps, I believe that Bing Maps brings some of the Google Earth stuff to Bing. But one of the things, because we've needed mapping a lot out here, you know, we're in sort of an isolated area. It only works, by the way, Bing Maps 3D only works in IE. And the way you would get it, if you look at that sort of reverse L-shaped gray area, on the top of that bar, it says 2D, 3D.
Yeah.
If you click 3D, that's how you would install it. You won't be able to do it in Chrome. They won't.
Oh, I'm in Chrome, yeah.
We'll see.
How did you know I was in Chrome?
But I saw the thing when it came down, the
Chrome,
tab bar.
The Chrome thing. You're so good.
Yeah. Have you seen the new Chrome beta, by the way?
No.
New icons and
stuff. Oh, you like it?
Toolbar. Yeah, it's beautiful. Anywho.
I use Chrome on all my machines now. I've become a major Chrome head.
I've moved on to that beta, you know, the beta path or whatever. So it auto-updated, and the new look is really nice. It's gray instead of blue, and it's beautiful.
Wow.
But anyway, back to Bing Maps.
Anywho.
So one of the with Bing Maps 3D, what you can do is you can actually rotate the view in 3D space. You can kind of do like a flyover. And it does a lot of the 3D fill-in stuff. But it also, of course, Microsoft has always had this thing called bird's eye view. And as you zoom in close, you get that really nice, it's like the view at an angle looking down as if from a plane. You know, and it's a very, very attractive view, and it does it automatically so that when you're looking at it in sort of a flat way, it's got that standard maps view. But as you go closer and closer, it turns into a satellite view. It
doesn't support Safari either. I guess you have to use this on a
Windows machine. Right now it's IE only, but you know, the regular Bing stuff does work in all the browsers. It's just the 3D thing. So this is a Windows podcast, so I think it's okay if you have to use IE just for this thing.
I would, but there's no IE on the Mac.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're using the wrong kind of computer. There's a page at Microsoft that can help you make that decision.
I'm ready to switch.
The second one. This was a last minute addition, but Daniel, I'm going to screw up his name. I'm sorry. Aguilar, who's written me a number of times. He had a tip from last week as well. Told me about something called Goo Reader, which is a beautiful looking front end. It looks a lot. I mean, the bookshelf view in this application looks a lot like these, you know, iBooks and the media app. But this is a beautiful front end for Google Books and Magazines, right? You can limit the search to just those books and magazines that are unlocked, you know, that you can access the full content, or you can see the whole collection. But it presents it in that classic bookshelf view. They've got, you know, old magazines in there and all kinds of stuff. It's a beautiful presentation. Unfortunately, you know, it does that thing that's sort of a pet peeve of mine. It does the page turn animation, and I haven't found a way to turn that off. But it is an attractive presentation, and there's some classic stuff in there. I mean, obviously, I mean, a lot of the Google scan stuff is old, but it's just a neat presentation. So that's it. GooReader.com.
And it uses the .NET framework, so it's Windows.
Yeah, and if you pay for it, you can save. You can save it to PDF.
Oh, neat. This is really slick. I love that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful looking app. I wanted to mention, you know, last week I recommended a really cool text editor, if you can believe that, called Microsoft Bend, and it was up on the Coplex website. And mysteriously, I think it was today, it just disappeared. There is no trace of it whatsoever. And if you didn't, I'm sure you don't. You weren't around, so it was basically a text editor, which sounds ridiculous, but it looked like the Zune software, high quality fonts, you know, really beautiful. It's a neat application, and I don't know what happened to it. So I'm hoping to figure that out, but as of right now, I guess it's just gone. I'm not sure why. So sorry if you. I had a number of people write me today saying, "Hey, I just listened to the podcast finally, and I went to get it." It's gone, and I actually have no idea what happened to it.
That's too bad.
In fact, I made it up. It didn't actually ever exist.
It was just a dream.
Yeah, I just...
it was all a dream.
Yeah. So, sorry.
Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's also the author of this fine tome right here. Oh, it weighs about a pound and a half. It's the Windows Business Secrets.
I can't believe you. So I got to send you a newer book.
Why?
Now, the thing's
is this
like
the
three
old
years
one?
Old. That's the first one.
Oh, well,
you know, the second edition of that is almost twice as thick. And then there's a Windows 7 Secrets, which, of course, is also 1,000 pages long.
Oh, yeah, I have that somewhere. Why is this here?
You know, the book I just wrote, Windows Phone Secrets, hopefully will be even skinnier than that book.
Because
I'm thinking it's going to be in the 450, you know, somewhere.
I'm amazed you get that much out on a phone. Yeah, this is 650 pages.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be smaller.
This is the one you wrote with old Baldy.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. But
which one's Paul?
Yeah, the one with hair. Yeah.
Windows 7 Secrets, Windows Phone Secrets, soon to emerge along with the Windows Phone. And, of course, Paul is the news editor for Windows IT Pro 2 and joins us every Thursday at 11 a.m.
Sorry about the connection problems.
No, it's fine. People who are listening to the podcast after the fact have no idea what you're talking about because we cleverly molded the show to make it all work fine. You can catch this show live, though, at 11 a.m., and you can hear all the problems as they happen.
As they happen.
2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv.
I can guarantee you this, sir. By next Thursday, I can't guarantee anything, actually.
I was waiting.
I will do everything I can to fix that problem.
So you'll still be in Germany next week?
Yes.
Oh, I don't care. You know, I love it. It doesn't matter because the perfection that we are seeking is unattainable.
It's not existent.
It does not exist.
It's not going to happen.
So we'll just live with the way it is because that's life.
I appreciate your honesty.
Have a great evening, Paul. Auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time on Windows. Shit, what is that?
Dankeschön.
Dankeschön.